You're tuned to the Texas Standard on this Friday. I'm David Brown. When the National Archives made public thousands of documents on the assassination of President John F. Kennedy earlier this year, there was a lot of anticipation, certainly among conspiracy theorists. There are still more documents that may be released, but it's possible nothing in those files will be quite as powerful as the real-life recollections of Clint Hill. Mr. Hill served in the U.S. Secret Service under five presidents, from Eisenhower to Ford, but he's likely to be best remembered as that agent who jumped onto the back of the limo carrying President Kennedy and the First Lady on that fateful day in Dallas in 63. Mr. Hill is now the co-author of three books recalling his experiences. But surely, that story of what happened in Dealey Plaza, Mr. Hill, that's got to be exhausting to tell again and again.
Well, I never really get tired about it. I'm trying to convince people and make them understand that what really happened, because the movie JFK that Oliver Stone put out is such a fabrication of truth that it's distorted the way people see history in that era. And so I'm just trying to straighten the record, really.
Well, what in particular do you feel like needs to be straightened out in terms of the public's memory of that event?
Well, there only was one shooter. There only were three shots fired. And that's the thing that most people can't really accept, that they don't think that's possible. Well, if you look back in history, you'll find out that that's exactly the case in most instances of attempted assassinations or successful assassinations. I mean, you can start with the individual who recently was in a hotel room in Las Vegas and killed a number of people. They still don't have any idea as to why, and he acted alone. Or the case of Congresswoman Gifford down in Arizona. That particular individual had never come to light to any law enforcement agency, and yet he acted out and almost killed her.
You know, right now we feel like we're in a particularly explosive political moment. But if you look back at history, I mean, almost every modern president except maybe, I don't know, Eisenhower, maybe one or two along the way, have been targets of would-be assassins.
No question, that's true. And it just seems to be getting worse with time. The general public has a sense that they can't believe what the government tells them. It didn't used to be that way.
Mr. Hill, how did you wind up in the White House detail? What was the moment? Could you tell us about how you got tapped for this prestige position?
Well, originally I was in the military. I was trained as a counterintelligence agent by the U.S. Army. And I did that for a number of years, and then I came into the Secret Service back in 1958. And during the first year I was in the service, they sent me to the White House for a 30-day evaluation period. And I apparently met their standard, because shortly thereafter I was transferred to the White House, and I never was permitted to leave. My entire career was spent in Washington, attached to the White House or the protective operations.
What is it that makes a protective service agent?
Well, you have to be willing to sacrifice a great deal, because you're never home. That's one thing. I was gone about 90% of the time. I had a wife and two children, but my two boys never really had a close relationship with me because I was gone all the time. And that's the case with most of the agents who are assigned to protective operations. It's a difficult job, very difficult.
Yeah, and there are some things that it's hard to imagine how one would prepare for it. I was reading about what happened when... Well, there are some terrific incidents involving President Nixon in particular, when he decides early one morning he's going to go out among a sea of protesters. You're laughing. You remember that?
Oh, I definitely do remember that, because I couldn't believe he actually did that.
The idea was he wanted to sort of make a political statement about how he was listening to the young people who had gathered on the mall, right?
Well, yeah, but it happened at 4 o'clock in the morning. And when he got down to the Lincoln Memorial to sit down, he sat down on the steps. And the students at first didn't realize who it was, but once they did, they began to congregate around him. Then he tried to engage them in a conversation about, just so happened some were from Syracuse University, about the football team at Syracuse. Well, these kids weren't in town because they were interested in football games. They were there because they were anti-Nixon.
This wasn't
small
talk,
right? It was anti-Vietnam, is what it was. So they had no interest in that conversation whatsoever.
There were other things that would happen. I mean, I was thinking of LBJ. He had a particular interest in what you folks wore, as I understand it. He had a sort of a ranch costume that he tried on.
Well, he had what we called ranch clothes, which were very, very nice, high quality clothes.
They looked like jumpsuits or
something. Well, no, it was a two-piece pants and shirt.
All right.
Yeah, he had his tailor measure me one day, and I didn't know what he was doing it for. And then a few weeks later, I get a package while we were at the ranch, and in the package is a set of the clothes identical to his. And then he requested I put them on, and he happened to be in the swimming pool at the time, and he asked I come out to the swimming pool and model them. So it was extremely embarrassing, but I had to do it.
But there, I mean, speaking of embarrassing, Nixon had his own ideas about what the White House details should wear. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, when Nixon went to Europe and they saw how the palace guard was clothed, they wanted the White House police officers to be garbed like these people were in Europe. And it was ridiculous. And it only lasted one time when they showed up and the press just went crazy. And they finally decided, well, that was a bad idea. It was a waste of a lot of money is what it was.
I want to ask you what you think of the fact that for a lot of folks, Clint Hill will always be associated with that day in Dallas. Do you wish that weren't the case, or how do you feel about that?
Well, I wish it certainly weren't the case. It never happened. I was requested in 2009 to contribute to a book that was being written, and the person that was writing that book, Lisa McCubbin, asked to talk with me, and I gave her some interviews over a period of time, and she really was the one who gave me the opportunity to, cleanse my emotional baggage that had been built up since 1963, because I had had a very difficult time over the years dealing with it, and she made all the difference in the world.
When you say you had a difficult time dealing with it, did you blame yourself somehow?
I blame myself for not being able to do something to prevent the assassination from happening. It was our responsibility to keep the president safe, and we failed to do so. And I felt guilty, and that responsibility just bothered me for years and years. It just ate at me, and it's why I was retired in 1975, because by that time, that emotional baggage had caused my physical condition to deteriorate to the point where I couldn't even pass the physical.
How are you feeling now?
Oh, now I'm better than ever. All because I've been able to get that emotional baggage out and to talk about what happened. And this book really is a history of 1958 to 1975. And it was a real many, many historical events that took place.
Absolutely. It is a stroll through history. I say a stroll. It's very well documented. And a lot of research went into this in addition to your recollections. Clint Hill, Five Presidents, My Extraordinary Journey with Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, and Ford. It's a New York Times bestseller. Thanks so much for coming in and talking with us on the Texas Standard.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.